Thank you for being here with me once again. Hey, I've got a podcast extra for you. This is Bill Klaproth, host of Which Way Is Life, the podcast designed to help you find a healthier, inspired life. Today, we're going to talk with Mark Sanders. Mark was my guest back on episode 49. He is a prostate cancer survivor. So, in honor of Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, which is in September, we're having Mark on to kind of update us on new things in prostate cancer. So men, listen up. Do not stop this podcast. Make sure you keep listening. Mark is a writer, editor, publisher, public speaker, and 11-year prostate cancer survivor. As an active surveillance patient, instead of receiving traditional treatments like surgery or radiation, Mark dramatically overhauled his lifestyle and the cancer went away. Interesting, huh? So, Mark, thank you so much for being on with us again during Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. So the most important question I have for you, I think, how are you doing, and is the cancer still in remission?
Yes, Bill. Thanks for asking, and it's a pleasure to be with you again. And yes, I'm still cancer-free and learning new stuff all the time about how to stay that way and how to help other folks stay that way.
That's great. We can't wait to hear what you've learned so you can educate us all. And of course, as I mentioned, Mark is back for Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. So let's go through this. Half the men in the United States over the age of 50 have significant prostate problems, right?
That's true. And significant in that they've gone to see their doctor because they're having trouble going to the bathroom. Or they have pain or itching or something like that. And 50% of American men over 50 went to the doctor this year, or will go to the doctor this year, about prostate problems. So that tells you something.
Right. And there's probably men that are experiencing problems that just are blowing it off, if you will. So what are the main symptoms we should be looking out for?
Well, if you're getting up to pee several times in the night, that's a biggie. If you're having trouble peeing, so it's like you feel like you're trying to pee and it's just not happening, that's another one. If you have itching, burning, those kind of sensations when you pee, that's another one. And if you are just walking down the street and all of a sudden the urge to go to the bathroom just overcomes you, that's another one. You feel like, you know, you're Clark Kent looking for a phone booth. You've seen those, I think those Flomax commercials on TV where guys are ducking into the bathroom left and right, and that's kind of what it's like.
Right. Every baseball game or football game you watch, those commercials are there all over the place. So the American Cancer Society predicts there will be more than 161,000 new cases of prostate cancer in 2017 and approximately 27,000 deaths from prostate cancer. So this is serious.
It is serious, and it affects 1 in 7 men in the United States. So chances are everybody knows somebody who has either had prostate cancer or is going to have it. And the numbers are going down, thankfully, and that's largely due to early detection, PSA testing, and a bunch of other stuff we'll probably get to later. But they're still high. I mean, 1 in 7, that's a lot of people.
That it is. So prostate cancer, as you mentioned, it's high. It's the second most common kind of cancer in American men behind skin cancer. So again, this is serious. Okay, so tell us, you just said it is going down though. So is state-of-the-art prostate cancer prevention and detection and treatment that's starting to kick in, or we're starting to learn more things? Tell us about that.
Yeah, we definitely are. And a lot of the reading, like I was talking about earlier, and research has been about the prevention side of things, but it's more than prevention. It's more of a lifestyle change that anybody can do, and you don't have to be a man to do it. And the idea behind it is that you're healing your body because your prostate lives in your body, obviously. And if you have a healthy body, you're going to have a healthy prostate, chances are. The way I like to look at it is that you can't have a healthy prostate in an unhealthy body. Now, it's possible that your prostate, you have cancer, and your body's pretty healthy, but what I'm finding lately is that the more we focus on diet, and the more we focus on exercise and stress reduction, sleep and recovery, and a purpose for being or a reason to be healthy, it's amazing what the effects are. And they're not just sort of little anecdotal here and there. There's like really good scientific research that this stuff works.
So prevention really is key here. So let's dig into this a little further, reducing inflammation, balancing hormones, managing your nervous system, et cetera. So let's get into the different things that I know you can help educate us on.
Sure.
So let's talk about diet first.
Great. I think that somewhere between 75 and 80% of health begins with what's on the end of your fork. So what you choose to put into your body is going to determine your health 75% to 80%. And what I mean by that is there's something called the standard American diet, which is another word for the Western diet. And it's got a lot of grains, a lot of dairy, a lot of trans fats, and a lot of sugar. And those are all killers for your health. And what they found is you take these guys out. So you take out the sugary beverages, the sugar and all the cereals. Like if you walk down the processed food aisles of any supermarket, and the best one is the breakfast cereal aisle, and you grab a box and you turn and look at it, the number one or two ingredient is sugar. Number one ingredient is usually wheat, and the number two is sugar. And we've got a whole food culture that is just attuned to having a lot of sugar in our system, which means we have a lot of insulin in our system, which means we store a lot of fat. And when you take the sugar out, all of a sudden you don't have that signal to store all the fat. And let's face it, two-thirds of the country is overweight or obese. And that's the easiest place to start with your prostate health. And in fact, being obese is, other than age, is the, I'll say age is the number one predictor of prostate cancer, but obesity is number two.
So cutting out the sugar, that seems like it's job one. I like how you said that. 80% of your health is determined by what's on the end of your fork. That's
it's true. It's really true. It's amazing. And this coming from me, I thought I really had it down, dialed in. And the more I read, the more I understand about, there's some, you know, I really am a big proponent of eating lots of vegetables, but some things that you would consider vegetables, like legumes or nuts or things like that, have some things in it that you have to watch out for too, which I discovered recently in my own health. It was like, oh wow, I'm having some inflammatory responses to eating a lot of walnuts and almonds. And it's like, oh yeah, then basically you have to rinse your walnuts and soak them in salt water, and they're fine. But I didn't know that. No one told me that until I did the research. So it was really interesting.
That is interesting. So let's talk about a little bit, you know, you mentioned things you think are healthy that may not be healthy. So what did you find in walnuts and almonds that you have to get out before you can consume them?
Well, phthalic acid is one thing, and it creates an inflammatory response in your body. And it's also what they call an anti-nutrient. So it binds to other nutrients and prevents them from being completely absorbed by your body. Lectins is another. These are basically seeds, nuts, grains, things like that. Mother Nature put these little toxic substances on the seeds and the grains and the nuts so animals wouldn't eat them, so they would germinate on their own in the soil. And they're like mildly toxic, so they're not like, wow, you're going to have a full, I mean, some people have nut allergies and they can be lethal, but for most people, it's just a little something's off. And you don't notice it. Like for me, I was getting pimples in my nose, and I was having some pains in my stomach that I really didn't understand what was going on. It was like a little bit lowered in my stomach, so I thought maybe I had gallstones or something like that. And as it turns out, it was just a response to the anti-nutrients, if you will, in nuts. And I quit eating the nuts about 3 weeks ago, and I was like, wow, all of a sudden it's like, woof, I feel a lot better. I don't have those nose problems or, you know, any pains in my abdomen. And I'll probably go back to eating nuts I'm going to give it 45 days just to go through the process of sort of cleansing out, and then going back to soaking them in sort of salty water for 12 hours. And apparently that kills all the lectins and the phthalic acid or whatever, denatures them or something like that. But, it, you know, mm-hmm. just little things like that. I mean, I gave up grains probably, I don't know, 5 years ago. And that was, I gave up grains and I lost 15 pounds. And I was just like, what? What the heck happened? And it wasn't like I was trying to lose weight. It was just like I quit eating bread and I quit eating rice and quinoa. And all of a sudden, it was like, wow, that's amazing.
So that's interesting. You know, quinoa is one of these amazing new kind of superfoods.
Right.
Everybody's like, hey,
right.
should you have it? Like kale had its moment.
Sure.
Now it's like quinoa
right.
is having its moment. So
yep.
you bring up a really interesting point. You should probably take an inventory of everything you consume on a daily basis for a couple of weeks and just really understand what it is you eat. And then find out what nutrients and what's in all of those things. So you really know what you're putting in your body, because you bring up a great point. Quinoa, it's great. You should eat it, but it may not agree with you, or there may be something in your body that it just doesn't work right. So probably a good idea to understand that, right? What you're eating.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. And some people even go as far as do a food diary. Okay, I ate one strawberry, I ate an apple, I ate, you know, this, that, and the other. That's one way of really keeping a good log of it. I think the trick that most of us don't do, and I certainly was guilty of this, is I just didn't listen to my body. I was having things going on in my body that they were going on, but I never associated them with what I was eating. It was just like, I wonder what that's all about. And that's about as far as the thought went.
Right. And as far as sugar, as you mentioned, knowing what you eat, trying to, here's my source of sugar. Here's, if I cut this out and then try to break it down by simple steps, hey, if I cut this down by half to start with, you know, some people can't go cold turkey, but I'm going to do less of this. Or you know what? I'm not going to eat cheese. I'm not going to sprinkle cheese all over this. Or I'm going to cut this out a little bit at a time.
Right.
That can really make a big difference.
Yeah, and like you said, you have to step yourself into it. It's a series of baby steps. There's some real simple things like, you know, those, what do you call them, energy beverages, Monster and Red Bull and all those guys. There's like a daily helping of calories in each one of those cans. And they're so full of sugar that your body, with liquid sugar, you can just take it in and you can be hungry a half hour later. So you just drank, you know, your daily requirement of calories, and now you're hungry again. And it's only been 20 minutes.
And right. So, think about all the Starbucks we consume in this country, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those Frappuccinos, man, they taste good. But they're not so great for you.
So true. Okay, so that's the diet component. I think we discussed that, and I think we gave some people some good tips there. How about exercise and fitness?
Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, who was around 2,300 years ago, said that walking is the best medicine. And I think he's actually pretty close to right. Most Americans work in a sedentary environment. They're sitting a lot. And they may be revved up on two or three cups of coffee, but they're still sitting. And so they're sitting for hours at a time. And human beings just weren't designed to do that. We were designed to walk and run. And so the more you can get up and get moving and get out during your workday. So, like, you know, you got a 15-minute break, go for a walk. Don't just head right over to the candy machine or whatever, or go take a lunch break or a cigarette break. Go for a walk. It's great stuff. Mm-hmm. I have a dog, and I live in a 500-square-foot condo. And so the dog comes and brings me one of my socks. And that's my cue of, like, it's time to get up and get going, pal. And so, you know, I have sort of a built-in mechanism, but every 3 hours she wants to go out and we go out. And
your dog's name is Socks. So there's a synergy there. Oh.
Yeah, there could be. No, but she looks like she could be. She's got four white socks on a black body, so she probably could be Socks. I just think it's really important to exercise. Do it daily. Get out. There are lots of studies that show that people who get significant cardiovascular exercise 6 days a week, and that means breaking a sweat for more than 20 minutes or breathing hard for more than 20 minutes, have significantly better health. And so if you have to forego your lunch break and just go for a vigorous walk, it'll do more good for you than anything. And people who, you know, don't have that luxury, or they could do it at night when they get home from work. And that's assuming that, you know, you're not working three jobs and you don't have 12 kids to take care of. But
And it's easy to do, and the walk around the block is absolutely free. So
right. There's no health club costs or fees or anything like that.
It's so good and it's so easy. And people have called me a workaholic before in my life. And the benefit I get out of doing this podcast is I hope to bring a lot of great information to my listeners. But, you know, I get it too. I talk to guys like you and I go, oh, that's a good tip. I should do that. So I've really started to get out a lot more this past summer. And I like it. I'm walking everywhere. Every morning I'm out walking. If I can't make it in the morning, I try to get out during the day. Just today at 11 a.m., I did a quick walk around the block. So I'm getting out. It's so nice to be out in nature. And another point that I want to touch on is stress reduction. And when you're out in nature, going on that walk, doing some deep breathing exercises, it's easy for that to notch that stress level down just a little bit too. So talk to us about stress reduction too.
I think, like I said, a lot of people work at desks and we're two or three cups of coffee in and the only exercise we're getting is our fingers are moving. And so our body's all revved up and ready to go, but it's not going anywhere. And so that's tough. I've developed a meditation habit where I meditate every day. A lot of people hear that and they go, I'm not doing that. That's crazy. But it's very, very helpful for me just because I'm just a lot calmer human being. I don't get as upset as I used to. And the other thing I've learned to do, and you mentioned it earlier, you're talking about taking a walk and breathing deep. I used to only breathe like about to my diaphragm, to like the middle of my chest. Now I've taught myself to take a deep breath and let that sort of the wave of the breath go all the way down into my pelvis. That's where your prostate lives. And so on an inhalation, I just relax my diaphragm and let that sort of wave of breath go all the way down and come all the way up. And the more I can do that while I'm typing or while I'm talking on the phone or writing or doing whatever, I just feel relaxed. And it's not difficult to do. It's pretty easy, but it's just that you have to remind yourself to do it till it becomes a habit. And they say that habits take about 3 weeks to develop, and it works.
It does work. Does work. I notice when I get out now, I automatically start deep breathing. Just I'm not even thinking about it, and I just start doing it. So that is so good. And here's another one, which I think is so darn important, but everybody overlooks or neglects. Sleep, rest, recovery. Tell us about that, Mark.
Well, if I'm a little bit like you, and I think I am somewhat of a workaholic, but I have to set limits at night to say, okay, at 9:30, I'm done. I'm not working anymore. And if you don't get enough sleep, if you don't get enough quality sleep, it doesn't matter who you are, your brain just does not work well. And if your brain's not working well, the rest of you isn't either. Okay? You're kind of being led around by your brain. And so getting 6 to 8 hours of sleep is just really important. And as far as, that's the sleep part. The rest, some people need more than that, or sometimes you just can't get that at night, and you got to figure out a way to make it okay to take a nap as long as you don't miss your bus ride stop or something like that. Some people can take those 15-minute cat naps in a chair, but I think it's really important. And I think it's important if you exercise regularly that you also build in days where you don't exercise. So you have a recovery day where you just, you do chores or you go shopping or hang out or whatever. It's okay to be a couch potato one day a week, but just don't make it seven. And I think that's the key to giving your body what it needs to hit the ground running, so to speak, when it's important to.
Pay attention to your sleep. If you've neglected it throughout your life, don't. Don't.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an investment in your health, that's for sure. And here's a great one. Reason to be healthy, kind of that reason for living, that meaning and joy in life. Tell us about that.
It's essential, and there's all kinds of information. Like the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute studied people who had cancer, and that 50% of them found that being in a loving relationship was more beneficial than chemotherapy. So if you have a reason to be here, if you have a loving family, if you have children, grandchildren, if you have a passion in life, like mine is sharing information about health and wellness, then you're more likely to be healthy because you have a reason to be here, as opposed to my job, I hate it, my family, I can't stand them, I just want to, move to the middle of some island somewhere and never talk to anybody again. Well, that's okay if you feel that way, but it's not a healthy mindset. It won't get you where you want to go in life in terms of having a healthy life. I mean, my goal is to have a quality of life curve that resembles a cliff. It just goes and goes and goes and goes, and then all of a sudden it just drops precipitously, and that's when I'm no longer here. And so if you have a reason to be here, then you can have a curve like that, as opposed to most Americans whose health slowly declines over time to the point where they're in a walker, maybe even wheelchair-bound by the time they get into their 80s and 90s. And nobody wants to be in pain. Nobody wants to be living a really severely limited lifestyle. So, like, take care of your body. Be here. Be have a reason to be here. Find a reason. If you don't have a reason to be here, find one.
Right. And that's so important. And if you have a passion, indulge it. That's what can make life worth living is, you know, I love photography, but I never do it. Well, get into it. You know, if you want to get more out of life, you got to put more into it. And if, you know, I love to take pictures, then do it and get out there and catch a sunrise or a beautiful sunset or something. Indulge those passions. And all of a sudden you will find that joy to life or that rekindled spirit to life. And sometimes it's right in front of you, but you just have to work for it a little bit, but it's there. So that's a great one, Mark.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, I just wanted to get into detection and treatment. But first, detection. Tell us about some of the new things that you've learned about in detection for prostate cancer.
Most men have probably heard of PSA, and PSA is prostate-specific antigen, is a marker, it's a biomarker, that has gotten a lot of bad press recently. It went from being the greatest thing ever to, boy, we don't need to do that anymore, to, well, maybe it's actually useful. Well, fortunately, now they've developed, like, if you got a PSA test and the PSA comes back high, they've developed new biomarkers to go with that, to complement that, that can, they're either blood or urine biomarkers, and what they can do is they can tell you, you're likely to have prostate cancer, or no, you're not likely to have prostate cancer, which skips the idea of going from a high PSA score straight to a prostate biopsy. And prostate biopsies can cause all kinds of problems. And in fact, I almost died from one. I got sepsis after a prostate biopsy, and you know, I went to the ER, and the guy said, it's a good thing you came in here because you're 6 hours away from organ failure. All surgical interventions, and I consider a prostate biopsy an intervention, have complications. And so if you can skip that, well, let's do that and still be healthy. There are other things with prostate biopsies. Like, say, for example, you had a prostate biopsy. It came back positive for cancer. There are new tools that can tell you now whether you have, you know, the baby bear cancer or the papa bear cancer. And if you've got the baby bear cancer, you got lots more options. And if you have the papa bear cancer, you need to know about that because you need to do something about that and not become a statistic.
Well, that's really interesting. So the PSA test is still valuable. And if the PSA test generally is low on the low end, generally you're in pretty good shape then.
Correct. And PSA is just a mark. It doesn't tell you what's going on. It just tells you something's off or something's not off. And if you don't know what that is, because most men, like, you know, this 50% of men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. They have prostatitis, something. And it may not be cancer. It just may be that your prostate's swollen. So that's why you're having problems.
Mm-hmm. So as far as treatment goes then, emerging less invasive treatments are on the horizon or even here now, presenting fewer complications. Tell us about that.
Well, in the world of breast cancer, you know, in the 60s and 70s, they were doing total mastectomies on everyone. And now they're doing lumpectomies where they take the lump of the breast cancer's tumor out and they do some radiation, and then you don't have to lose your breast. Similar to how prostate treatment is now, in that they're treating smaller and smaller areas of the prostate, so you don't necessarily have to have your entire prostate removed, because that leads to all kinds of unwanted complications like incontinence and impotence, which no guy wants. Nobody wants to be incontinent. No one wants to be in diapers, and no one wants
Nobody wants that.
No, nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Sex is fun, and it's a wonderful part of life, and you don't want to have to give that up just in order to be, you know, here on the planet. So the fewer surgeries that you have, probably the better off you are. And so there's all kinds of really great little treatments that are minimally invasive, and there's a long discussion. It's another radio show, but there are a lot of them. And if anybody to the audience, if anybody in the audience knows someone who's going through prostate cancer, really talk to them about the possibility, if they have the right kind of cancer, for a minimally invasive procedure as opposed to a prostate removal.
Sex, yes. Diapers, no.
I think I'm going to make a bumper sticker.
Yay. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Mark. Well, You know, what attracted me to you last time is your story and what you did when you found out that you had cancer. And if you want the whole thing, go back to episode number 49 of Which Way Is Life, and you'll hear the whole episode with Mark. But when you find out you had prostate cancer, instead of receiving traditional treatments like surgery or radiation, you're just talking about some of that stuff and some mm-hmm. of the side effects that you can get with surgery or radiation mm-hmm. or even a biopsy, you right. dramatically overhauled your lifestyle and attacked the cancer with diet and nutrition, like some of the steps we were talking about, right? Can you just give Correct. Us a general overview of what you changed in your lifestyle to kind of get you going in the right direction?
In terms of diet, I dropped the sugar, I quit eating dairy, and I cut out grains. And the grains part was a slow change. Started with bread and just shifted that way. I was drinking unfiltered organic apple juice, thinking I was doing a wonderful thing for my body. Well, it turns out there's as much sugar in unfiltered organic apple juice as there is in Coca-Cola. So it was just my ignorance. And so I did that. I had a traumatic event when I was a kid that just never went away, and I had PTSD from it. And I went and did something called the EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprogramming. And basically, within a month, the PTSD went away completely. And I think that just being in that hypervigilant fight-or-flight kind of state, you know, that's a stress response. And so taking that out of the equation of my life was gigantic. I've always been sort of an exercise junkie, but I learned to embrace things like Pilates and yoga that help me move my pelvis more, as opposed to running and riding my bike and swimming and things like that, which didn't involve specific pelvic motion. And I think that's something, especially guys, we're just not, I mean, women dance and do Pilates and yoga and stuff like that much easier than men do in our culture. It's sort of seen as like, well, that's for girls. But it's not. Guys, go do some yoga. You'll meet some wonderful women too. So that's basically what I did. And then I learned to meditate, and that's not hard either. And like I said, I have a dog, and she requires that we go out. So we go out.
Well, that's good. And those are good steps and a good roadmap for any man wondering, how do I kind of start this journey? Those are great steps. Yeah. So that's why I asked you to kind of tell us what you did. Well, Mark, thank you for being on with me again today. Again, if you want to learn more about Mark, go back and listen to episode number 49. Mark is also the co-author of two books on prostate cancer, one for men with prostate problems called Do You Have Prostate Cancer? And another for men who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer called Prostate Cancer. So you can pick those up as well. And Mark, lastly, how can we connect with you?
You can go to health-otb.com. So it's health-otb.com. And you can pick up the books on Amazon or Books a Million or Barnes and Noble. They're out there.
All right, that sounds good. And we'll have links on the show notes page at radiomd.com. And as I wrap up every podcast, Mark, I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite quotes, which is, remember to enjoy the little things in life, because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things. Mark, thank you again.
Thanks, Bill. It was awesome.
So good to talk to Mark again. Once again, episode 49, if you want to hear the whole story on Mark Sanders. And thank you so much for listening to this podcast extra. Remember to catch every episode of Which Way Is Life. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or my show page at radiomd.com. Which Way Is Life is produced by radiomd.com, award-winning health podcasts. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter and Facebook. You can also check out the show notes at radiomd.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.